Beautiful people, welcome to the Let's Talk Agriculture podcast show. We are your preferred agriculture PR and communications network. At Let's Talk Agriculture, we help agriculture businesses globally to create brand awareness, and we do this through our podcasts, documentaries, 2D and 3D animations, and a lot more. So for more information, please visit us at letstalkagriculture.com or send an email to hello@letstalkagriculture.com. So this topic we're about to discuss was requested by Elvis Kachi, who is feeling the effect of the Ukraine crisis. And I was really thinking of the best person to handle this. And that's when I came across an agriculture brand on LinkedIn called the African Fertilizer and Agribusiness Partnership, AFAP, who is actively organizing agribusiness stakeholder roundtables. And I thought to reach out to the CEO. And that's when I realized that we had the same concerns as regards the Russia and Ukraine crisis and the effects in food cost. So guys, join me as we welcome Michael Sudakasa, the CEO of AFAP, on the Let's Talk Agriculture podcast show. Hello, Michael. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and thank you for the invitation. I appreciate the opportunity to share my views on a very important subject for all of us in the African agricultural ecosystem.
Thank you so much for honoring our invitation. It's really a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much. So just before we get right into this, I would like you to tell us a little bit about you, your journey in the agriculture space, and possibly the impact you've made so far. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. I am a 25-year veteran, if you will, in terms of working in the area of African agricultural development, have worked across the landscape currently with AFAP, and I've become involved with AFAP back in 2014 through a firm that I founded and I remain chairman of, Africa Business Group, providing organizational and strategic advice to AFAP. We did midterm review for them back in 2014, 2015. We did some organizational management work in 2019. And then last year, we undertook a strategic review for AFAP. And it was really that work that set the stage for AFAP to reach out to me to step into the CEO's seat, which I did in May of this year. But prior to that, I'm a U.S.-trained commercial attorney and had a trade and investment advisory firm in the 90s in the U.S., and we worked on agricultural projects in different parts of Africa. We helped bring Domino's Pizza to South Africa in the early 90s. We traveled to South Africa at the invitation of the South African Department of Agriculture to look at opportunities for U.S. companies to do business in then what was called the new South Africa. We've worked with FAO. We've worked with colleagues from EFAD. We've worked with the African Green Revolution Forum for a number of years. We were the program director for AGRF, and AGRF is very similar to kind of the Davos of African agriculture. We've worked with AFAS in Uganda. So the focus has been on capacity development, and it's been on private sector development in the agricultural space and moving what are traditionally subsistence farmers to think about farming as business. We try also to promote inclusion. I've tried in my career and get young people involved in agriculture, get more women empowered in agriculture. Women are often the farmers, but they're not often the ones who necessarily own the land or who collect the payments from the work that they do. So we've tried to change that. So from my vantage point, what has been quite rewarding about moving to AFAP is that the platform that AFAP has through kind of a team of teams spans 9 countries. With Africa Business Group, where I was before, we worked continentally, but not with a formal presence in each market. With AFAP, we have that here. Our headquarters is in South Africa, but we have offices in Mozambique, in Malawi, in Kenya, in Uganda and Tanzania. Most recently, we opened an office in Zambia, and then we also have offices in Ghana and Nigeria. So we are, I think, quite well positioned to follow our mandate, and that mandate is really to help improve last mile logistics and access to inputs and toward the improvement of soil health for smallholder farmers in particular. And we from, for example, our office in Ghana also worked with farmers and hub agri-dealers in Burkina Faso and Mali, and we're looking to do more in Francophone West Africa. So the journey for me has been one looking at policy, one looking at market entry by international companies coming to do business in Africa's agricultural sector. It's been involving the private sector's development and the role of private sector as a catalyst for investment in agriculture. And then more recently, it's been looking at the inputs, because inputs drive yields. So for food security on the continent, we have to improve the yields that African farmers are getting, and using better seeds and using fertilizer is key to that. So I know that was a long response and intro, but I wanted you to give you a little bit of a context about my work and the spaces that I've worked in as it relates to agriculture in Africa.
Thank you so much for that introduction. Yes, it's really a long one, but I don't mind really. Well, thank you so much again. And it's really amazing to see what you're doing for smallholder farmers, because of course, like you rightly mentioned, the smallholder farmers mainly comprise of women and they're not really getting what they deserve. So I'm really grateful for you and your team putting all of that in place for smallholder farmers. So thank you very much for that. And we'll be getting right into this briefly. But then again, when I checked your LinkedIn, I was seeing so many information as regards the agribusiness stakeholder roundtable. So I wanted to just learn about it, and maybe there is some sort of possibility that the reason why you're setting up this roundtable is to discuss fully on how the Russia and Ukraine crisis is affecting the whole food production. So is there a reason behind the agribusiness stakeholder roundtable?
So we definitely are trying to address some of the challenges that have arisen because of the conflict in Ukraine. To be fair, these are conflicts that began during COVID, when we had closed borders, which impacted access to fertilizer, impacted the ability to sell and receive income from international markets, and many of our countries are quite dependent upon receiving payment from buyers in Europe, buyers in the US and Asia. The challenge that we saw, and we have partnership as part of our name, as the African Fertilizer and Agribusiness Partnership, was that in responding to the shortage of fertilizer and the inaccessibility of grains, you had stakeholders in countries pursuing some type of mitigation effort separately. And we felt like and feel like that we will all be a bit better off if we have a better sense of what each other are doing, if we look to see where we can collaborate. In one sense, the situation in Ukraine was a bit of a wake-up call because I think development partners, DFIs, the development finance institutions that focus on Africa and work within Africa, countries themselves, and citizens were a bit shocked by our dependence on grain from Ukraine, where Africa has 25% of the arable agricultural land in the world, quite richly endowed continent, but yet significant proportions of the grains, which are staples for many African countries, come from Ukraine. And Russia is a major supplier of fertilizer, and significant portions of the fertilizer that are sold on the continent come from Russia. So, where embargoes were placed on Russia so that we were buying less product from Russia, that really hit Africa, African countries hard in terms of where would we get fertilizer. It also meant that globally there was less product in the market, which has led to price escalation. So even where there is product available, it's in many cases three, four times what it cost before. And then Africa is a much smaller user of fertilizer. So the average African farmer uses, let's say, 11 to 12, some 15 kgs of fertilizer per hectare, when the global average is 130 kilograms of fertilizer per hectare in other parts of the world. So for fertilizer producers, there are other more lucrative markets where they turned to sell their product. So there have been a number of initiatives, and we're pleased to be part of them to try and first attract fertilizer to the continent, and then to cost effectively have it distributed. So that's a major challenge that has grown out of the conflict in Ukraine. And the short, medium term is that we're going to have a challenge through this calendar year, probably through next year, because the infrastructure in Ukraine is being damaged. So the ability of Ukraine farmers to plant and harvest for next year, I mean, right now, what has been released, thankfully, are what's in storage, but that will be significantly depleted this year. And then we're going to have a challenge. So we're working with African countries also to say, how do we use this crisis? You know, there's a saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. How do we use this as a wake-up call and as intra-African trade in foodstuffs, particularly staple products? Also, how do we look at potentially manufacturing fertilizer utilizing inorganic or organic fertilizer instead of just inorganic fertilizer, that most to address these dual needs. We need fertilizer and we need food security. And how can Africa play a greater role in providing for its own needs, as opposed to being so dependent and so vulnerable to international shocks? I'll
Thank
stop there.
you. Sure. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know we both agree that Africa has the capacity to become self-sufficient, but for some reasons that we do not know, there are some limitations. So what do you see as Africans' limitation at this point? Because I believe that this is a time for us to somehow take advantage of the crisis, just like you mentioned, so that we can get a balance. So, what do you think are the limitations? Are there any possibilities of us actually moving past this?
Well, the key ones, and there are a number. So, for example, when we talk about agricultural development, we must speak about agricultural investment. And in many countries, land tenure is not secure or in a fee simple structure. And so the chief or the village or the community owns the land. And so that's for many, a disincentive to invest in irrigation, for example. So that means that we're dependent upon Mother Nature to provide rain, and rain patterns through global climate change have changed and decreased in terms of the volume of rain, or if we get the same volume of rain, we get it in a much shorter period of time. So there are a number of challenges to the farmer. So, you know, one is I don't have land tenure, so I haven't invested. Again, half the continent's people, 600 plus million Africans, do not have access to electricity. So that means we're farming without automation. We're not using necessarily global good practice, smart farming, mechanization, even using electricity to power irrigation, water pumping, etc. So that's another challenge for the continent to really do what it could if it had better infrastructure. We also spend $50-60 billion a year importing food. So there are foods that we eat that we don't produce. So our value addition in the agricultural and agribusiness value chain is inadequate to supply food to the continent. All of this is within the backdrop of a rapidly growing continent and a rapidly urbanizing continent. So you have elderly smallholder farmers. The average age of a smallholder farmer is 65 years of age. Young people have been reticent to get involved in agriculture using the same tools that their grandparents did. So they want to do so with more modern farming technologies, but they want farming to be lucrative beyond just farming to eat. And so we've had a challenge there getting new blood, literally and figuratively, involved in African agriculture. Our population is doubling in the next 28 years to over 2.4 billion people from the current number, roughly 1.4, 1.5 billion people. So it could be even higher as healthcare, improved healthcare means people are living longer. So our mortality rates are kind of going down. I talked about urbanization, so you have greater populations of people leaving rural areas, which is where we farm principally, moving to cities. There's an opportunity for urban agriculture, and at AFAP, in partnership with ABG, we're looking at improving that as well. But these are some of the challenges that keep our agricultural sector from growing. Also, there is real and perceived risk. So the financial community on the continent has not significantly provided loans and investment to the agricultural sector. It's a little bit better in the agribusiness sector, but there's still a huge gap between the need for capital and the available capital. And that's for inputs, that's for tractors, that's for warehousing infrastructure, that's for post-harvest management of crops, cold chain development so that products don't spoil, logistics, transportation, getting product from the field and the upcountry where things are grown to markets, which tend to be urban areas, or to port for export. So there are a number of different things that keep us right now from being able to be self-sufficient in food.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yes, I really, really, really do agree with you. So many things are keeping us from, and I really wonder, I mean, are we saying that people do not want to invest in agriculture or something? I mean, is there a reason why people find it difficult to invest in the agriculture space? I know it's getting better now, though, but at some point, it wasn't looking like it.
Can you just repeat the last part? In some point, you're saying that people...
mean, at some point, it just felt like people weren't investing in the agriculture space or something. Because I mean, I do believe that the agriculture sector is the mainstay of so many economy, but at some point, it's not being prioritized. So, what do you think? Do you really think that investors, they don't see something good out of it or something? Because here in Nigeria, I'm very, very sure that the contributions, the allocations of funds to the agriculture space is not really much. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, my thoughts are that agricultural investment is improving, but I don't think it's improving fast enough to meet the demands of the sector. So again, I mentioned a number of the risks that are perceived and real. So climate change, for example, creates risk. So you buy fertilizer, you buy seeds, you plant, and then the rains don't come. And so now you can't get your return on investment. Or there's a flood, and so everything is wiped out. That's a real, now you can get insurance to mitigate that risk, but it's a real risk. The majority of the farmers on the continent are smallholder farmers. They're farming on 1 or 2 hectares. The challenge there is you can't get economies of scale. So one, your output is limited. So you need someone to aggregate to give you larger quantities if you're an off-taker. When you're buying your inputs, you're not getting any volume discounts because you're buying in small quantities. So there's a need to work through how to aggregate, and whether it's an outgrower scheme or a cooperative, you're able to create a larger enterprise that becomes more attractive to a financial institution. If I have to provide micro loans or credit, there are not enough institutions that are set up to do that. To monitor and track and go after repayments for such small enterprises. At the same time, those enterprises are not producing just for market. They're producing for their families, and then they're selling the excess. So I talked about the absence or the limited state of land tenure on the continent. So again, these small farms that are communal farms, if I'm a bank, I can't take title to the property and have that be collateral for loans. So these are all impediments that you find. Now, you do have increasingly young people who are trying to use technology, young people who are trying to take inherited land or land acquired, create larger plots, and then think of it a bit more as a business. So try and get loans or try and get investment, family and friends. And then there are some venture funds that have capital, impact investors that have capital for agriculture. That's a relatively new phenomenon. So last 10, 15 years. But that's something that we advocate for and we hope to see more of in the future. When we were working with the AGRF team from 2014 to 2017, we talked about the need for greater demand-driven agriculture, meaning that the products are sold before seeds are planted. And so the farmer has some understanding of where their market is. Many of these smallholder farmers plant without knowing necessarily where the market is. But you have a growing number of retail institutions on the continent, the Pick n Pays of the world, the Carrefours of the world, Woolworths, Woolies, and then a number of homegrown makers than we had before. You have countries like Côte d'Ivoire that are exporting product. They've become one of the world's suppliers of cashews, for example, whereas 10, 15 years ago, they were not. So you have also growing trade in food and agriculture from the continent that create more interest within the financial sector in terms of investors and in terms of lenders. But in the big scheme of things, we have arguably billions of dollars of deficit in terms of the capital that could be put to work in the agricultural and agribusiness sector. But as of now, has not been.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I really do hope that we move past this, really. And I'm looking forward to the time where we can become self-sufficient here in Africa and really embrace the name that we have, the Giants. Thank you so much again for coming on the show. We really appreciate you coming on the show to share your knowledge with us. It's really, really important to us. One of our core values, one of our objectives here at Let's Talk Agriculture is to put out relevant information that would help farmers, stakeholders in the agricultural space. So it's really a pleasure to have you coming on the show today, taking out this time out of your busy schedule to be with us here today. So once again, I appreciate you for coming on the show. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much. I'd like to, in my closing remarks, just mention that it's not, from our vantage point, all doom and gloom. And we're quite excited about the initiative that we're supporting, kind of phase one of which is called Grow Ghana, as it was a response to the crisis in Ukraine and some of the climate change issues. Meant to promote resilience in the market there and also to provide price relief. So the Norwegian fertilizer company Yara is bringing 18,000 metric tons to Ghana and providing $20 million worth of free fertilizer through a program where farmers buy two bags and get one free. Targeting particularly the northern region of the country around the city of Tamale, which is the breadbasket of Ghana. And so trying to make sure that there's affordable fertilizer provided and that the logistics are also dealt with so that they get to shelves. There's also an initiative that we're involved in that is starting on the east and southern Africa region in that in those regions by Yara again, but with institutions like Rabobank, with support from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The International Fertilizer Association is encouraging its members, and there's Africa Forum within that organization. The global trading firm ETG has agreed to participate. And new partners that we're currently talking to include WFP, the World Food Program, and also Syngenta. And again, here the focus is getting product to Uganda, which is our first market, affordable fertilizer, but also looking at things like seed parcels, so that the farmers can grow food. You can't just eat a diet of maize. We want to promote the production of staple crops, but also food crops. We're looking at potentially also food parcels so that farmers, when they harvest, or even before they harvest, they don't side sell fertilizer because the prices are high, to eat. So they have food to eat. They can put their fertilizer into the ground and grow improved yields. That initiative is looking to move to multiple countries. We're looking at Mozambique, we're looking at Malawi. And so it's an industry response, which we appreciate. Also, development partners are coming to the party, and the Grow Ghana initiative, USAID is supporting that initiative in concert with AGRA, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, with whom we are working under a program called the PIATA program. All I'm saying is that when you look at the responses, there's a lot happening, and I think that's also worth noting.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you so much once again. We really appreciate you coming on the show. So it's 30 minutes now, and we don't want to take so much of the time anymore. So thank you, guys. Thank you for joining this show today. And please do follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. And we want to keep you updated with all of the relevant information that you need in this space. So thank you once again for listening. I hope to see you guys again. And thank you again to our guests for today. Thank you so much for joining. I hope we can do this some other time. Thanks a lot. Do have a great
time. It
will
be a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.